Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultra Life. And this week, man, I'm so excited to be joined by this guy because I've heard his name bantered about. If you've done any races down in North Carolina, you've heard this guy's name. But really what got me interested is I've looked at a lot of his photography on Instagram, and I'm going to let him give you his handle on Instagram, and his pictures are absolutely stunning. And then I found out that he's crazy and he's going to run Swami Shuffle 200 with us, and I thought, let me get this guy on. So without further ado, let's welcome in Mr. David Solomon. David, you ready to go for a little run?
Well, let's do it.
All right, man. How about we start Back Bay up here in Virginia? We run all the way down to Cape Hatteras Lighthouse and back. What do you think?
That sounds like torturous fun.
It is torturous fun, but you know, it's the best kind. So,
Yeah.
David, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do when you're not out running mad miles and doing your photography, which I just have to compliment you. It's stunning. So, who are you and what do you do? What kind of family do you have? All that good stuff.
So I'm married and have two sons, age 26 and 17, and I own a lawn care business, and I have two or three part-time guys that work for me. So when I'm not outdoors running and hiking, I'm outdoors earning a living. So I basically live outside pretty much. So everything I do is physical in nature and related to the outdoors.
Okay. And are you in Western North Carolina or where are you?
I'm in North Central, so I'm basically about 45 minutes north of Durham. I'm kind of just below the Virginia line, right in the middle.
Oh, wow. Like a Rocky Mount area?
South Boston, Virginia is 30 minutes from here.
Okay. All right. Now
Yeah.
I know where you are. Okay, cool. So when did you start doing the photography? Has this always kind of been something that you've done, or where did this come from?
Well, I guess like everybody else, I started taking more photos once that became a feature on cell phones. And then in 2017, I was posting some of my iPhone, let's see, what number was it then? iPhone 6, I think.
Okay. Wow.
on Facebook, and surprisingly people were asking to purchase prints, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe you think this is good enough to buy. And also, you know, this is an iPhone snap, right? So the image quality isn't going to be great. But anyway, I kind of figured out I sort of had a knack for the photography thing. It was something I guess I really had an interest in since I was a kid, but didn't really delve into because in the age of film, it was pretty expensive to snap photos, and it's not as expensive these days, at least with not having to use film. So then in 2017, I got my first camera, and since then I've bought a few others and some lenses and things too. So that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
That is amazing. Hey, go ahead and shoot out your Instagram handle because I think people will really love to start looking at some of the stuff you do.
Sure. So my name is David Solomon. So the biblical Hebrew meaning of those two words is beloved peace. So David means beloved and Solomon means peace. So the name of my photography page is Beloved Peace Photography.
That is perfect. What a great explanation. That's how you came up with it. That was going to be one of the questions was where did Beloved Peace came from? But now we all know that is cool. Have you always been a runner also? It sounds like the outdoors is like a huge part of your life, but where did the running come from?
My earliest recollection of distance running came when I was grade school age, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 maybe. And I remember we lived in a subdivision, and I guess if you went around the block, which is what we called it, it was probably a mile, maybe just shy of a mile. And I remember there was this high school jock that lived across the street, maybe middle school, but he seemed a lot older than me. And he was really into fitness, and he would run around the block multiple times. And I remember one day asking him if he would let me join him, and he thought it was funny because I was so much younger than he was. But I remember at least one time I went anyway, and he was surprised that I couldn't keep up with his pace, but I could match his endurance at least. And so he kind of hung around and let me go around with him at least once, maybe two or three times. And so that was my earliest recollection, I think, of really enjoying the endurance aspect of running.
Wow.
My first organized running came in ninth grade. In most school systems, that would be freshman year in high school, but in Person County, we were actually still in junior high. So I was actually running on the junior high school circuit with other ninth graders in the area. So I ran the 1 and the 2 mile. I had 3 second-place finishes and 1 first-place finish. I attribute most of that success to the fact that a lot of people weren't running the 2 miler, so it was not a popular event. So
okay.
I didn't have tons of competition, but my times were respectable, I think. I can't remember exactly, but I feel like at age 14, I might have done like a 14-something 2 miler.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah. And then I was trying out for track in 10th grade at the high school level, and I decided that partying and smoking cigarettes was more important, and high school track was way too hard. So I dropped out from tryouts and didn't even join the team. And then I really didn't do, except I joined the military and, you know, did the physical fitness stuff there, but it wasn't until after I had discharged active duty, I ran a 5K, Race for the Cure, in 1997. And it was really not even my idea. I was working in the mailroom at UNC at the time. And one of my coworkers got a flyer for us to put in everybody's mailbox. And she was like, "Hey, you should run this race." And I'm like, "Yeah, why not? I should run that race." So
you just go run a 5K just for the heck of it.
So I did the 5K, and, you know, it was kind of like, you know, whatever. But when I really got permanently hooked to distance running was later that same year, 1997. I trained for, or I called it training. It was really severe overtraining, I came to find out. But I ran Duke Children's Classic 15K, and I placed third in my age group, 2024
wow.
age group. And I was so stoked by the feeling of the longer distance. I mean, placing my age group was fun. I really liked that a lot, but that wasn't the lure. It was the grind and, you know, the surviving endurance. So I had runner's knee from severely overtraining, and I hobbled around the track at Wallace Wade Stadium because my knee was throbbing. But I spent my weeks of rehab reading books on how to properly train. And so that sort of kicked off what I call my permanent running career.
Yeah, no kid. I was looking a little bit. You ran your first JFK in 2001?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow. And how many times have you gone back and done JFK then?
I did JFK 7 out of 8 years in a row. So
wow.
I DNF'd in 2007, and then 2008 was my last attempt and finish.
That's amazing. Wow. So you're gonna watch the JFK numbers roll by this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I follow them on Instagram, so I kind of, you know, I see the stories and things that are posted. I always enjoy seeing that event take place. It will always be near and dear to my heart.
Yep. Yeah, I ran it one time COVID year in 2020 and loved it. Absolutely loved it. So what are some of the other things that you've done? Have you done Umstead and Uwari also?
I attempted Uwari once, even though I knew I had no chance of finishing because I'm just too slow. So I did
right.
2 loops of the Uwari 100. And it took me 19 and a half hours, by the way, to do those 21 miles or whatever it is. So I was just really, really slow. I knew I didn't have a chance to finish, but I needed to try anyway.
Yep. Yep.
And but the one race that will always be my all-time favorite is put on by the Mangum Track Club in Rockingham, North Carolina. And now I say they had an event because we just ran its final year on its 30th anniversary in June, but it was the Bethel Hill Moonlight Boogie 50 Miler,
Oh,
otherwise known, simply as the Boogie 50.
Yes.
And that, yeah, that was, that is, I say is, they may still do the marathon. The race director is not sure about that yet, but he's pretty firm that the 50 is, the 50 is done. So, and I finished that race 23 years in a row. So I had
Holy
the most
smokes,
finishes.
23 years in a row?
I did. So I ran my first 2002. So my JFK and Boogie finishes were running concurrent there for a little while. But then
okay.
along, you know, eventually I quit running JFK and then kept doing the Boogie. So, yeah, I love that race. It was very, very special race to me.
That's awesome. And I hear the race director's just an amazing person.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Doug Dawkins, yeah, he's a really good guy.
Wow. That's crazy. 23 straight years. Wow. It's run in
Yeah,
June when it's nice and hot.
It's nice and hot, but the good thing is it's run overnight. So you start at 6 p.m. and then run through the night. So the first is a, it's a 5 mile loop run 10 times. So the first loop is the toughest because it's the hottest. But then once you get into the nighttime hours, it, you know, the temperature backs off, and as long as you can stay awake and keep moving, you know, you get a finish. But the dropout rate was actually unusually high for a 50. Some years the dropout rate was close to 30%. So
really?
Yeah, because I don't know. I have a few theories. I think a lot of people don't like being, because it's literally in the middle of nowhere. So at night, you'll come across a runner here and there, but sometimes you'll spend significant amounts of time by yourself out there, you know, in the dark. And then you're passing by the start-finish area every 10 miles. I mean, there's just lots of good reasons to drop out if that's what you wanted to do. And so I think some people are just, they don't like nighttime running, or they go out too fast on the first loop, which is a dagger in that race because it's so hot. So, yeah, so it is definitely not an event for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
Okay. It just sounds neat. Where is that run, though?
It's in the same county as Rockingham, but it's in a little community called Ellerby.
Okay. That where they also do the Ellerby Marathon?
Yes, it is. So
okay.
I've got a log somewhere, and I haven't updated it in over a year, but across all of the MTC races, I've amassed well over 3,000 race miles. I don't know, it's probably closer to 4,000 by now, just in Mangum Track Club races, because I've run so many of their events over and over and over again.
And Mangum
Yeah.
is the track club that you have to run a, is it a 15 miler
Short
that you
run.
have to run? Yep. Is that right?
Yep. It's yeah. Yep. It's actually, technically it's 14.7 miles, but yeah, 15, basically 15. And it's point to point. And then you get your Mangum Track Club shirt and you're a member for life.
That's awesome. And so how have you been a member of Mangum for all the years you've been running then?
No, so when I first came off my first JFK finish, it was, I went to the Ellerby Marathon to the pre-race dinner, and I was feeling like a big shot because now I'm an ultra marathoner. I've got one under my belt, and so I'm talking about how I heroically finished the JFK 50 miler, and Mark Long, who was one of my dear friends for decades now, said to me, "Oh, you like 50 milers?" He said, "We have a 50 miler too. It's called the Boogie and it's in June. You should sign up." And so I did, 23 years in a row.
Oh my gosh. That is awesome. That is such a classic. Our friends are so awesome, aren't they? Getting us to do stuff like this. That is so cool.
Right.
That's awesome. Since you're such a big shot, sign up. There you go.
I can't tell you how, and anytime I see Mark, he still directs one of the MTC races, and he's at all of the events anyway. And I say, "You know, the way I'm feeling right now is all your fault, because if you hadn't have told me to sign up for the Boogie, I wouldn't be in this mess right now."
Yeah. I have nobody to blame but myself, so I can't blame anybody for my insanity. It's all been brought on by myself. So you've done, I mean, you've, man, over 4,000 Magnum race miles, and you've done a bunch of other stuff too. So what prompted you to sign up for Swamping?
Well, my first 100 miler was the Graveyard 100 in
Okay.
2014. And so now the current Blackbeard's Revenge 100 is basically the same course. So I was already familiar with the course, and then I signed up for Blackbeard's Revenge 100. I was signed up in 2020, and then COVID happened, but they would allow you to do it virtual. Well, I wasn't going to earn my virtual buckle with Blackbeard's likeness on it without going to the coast, because it just seemed silly to do miles anywhere that was not related to somewhere Blackbeard had been. So when the beaches reopened, I recruited a couple of my good friends, and they actually crewed for me on the actual Blackbeard course. So in June of 2020, I did the entire course just as it would have been done on race day to earn my buckle. So
Awesome.
even though it's not an official finish and it doesn't show up as an official finish anywhere, I did do the 100 miles. I think it was just shy of 34 hours.
Awesome.
So there's that. Also, I have solo hiked the entire length of the Outer Banks on just personal solo adventures. One year, my goal was to hike to all five lighthouses of the Outer Banks and Southern Outer Banks.
Cool.
So that was about 160 mile trek that I did one summer. And then my good buddy, Steve Dentz, did Swami in 2022. And then again this year in 2024. And so I crewed slashed paced him for both of those events. And then I'm like, it just kind of got in my head. You know, it's like, I know the Outer Banks so well. I've raced it, I've hiked it, I've crewed it, I've paced it. I'm like, why am I not signing up for my first journey race ever? Let's give this thing a go and see what
That
happens.
is
So
awesome. Well, I probably saw you out
that's.
there if you were crewing Steve this last year, because I've run at 23 and 24. So, yeah. So I'm trying to figure out.
I was on a white Ford F-250 with lots of lawn gear sticking out of the back. And so what I would do is, I think I met Steve, we did about 4 days together. So he'd been out there a day or two before we linked up. So
Okay.
he was shy of the lighthouse still when we first linked up. But basically what I would do is I would go about 4 or 5 miles ahead of him, park, and then run back to him, and then we'd run back up to my truck together, and then he would get whatever he needed out of my vehicle, and then I would go up a few more miles and repeat the process. And then in between, you know, I would make food runs for him and things like that. So I was logging miles and crewing at the same time. So I think this year, I think I'd have to look at my logs, but I feel like I did somewhere around 80 some miles on the course,
Wow.
maybe, you know, embedded in the crewing. And both years, 22 and 24, he and I did the entire beach section with him each of those years for the finish, not the start, but
Oh,
at the
really?
finish.
Okay. Wow.
So I know that section too.
Yeah, that's my favorite section. So
Right? It's
I
like,
was the
man.
insane person that this year I talked Richard Gleave. Yeah, we were on our way back the night of the massive, storm that was really nasty. And I talked Richard into I just said, look, man, we don't need to get a hotel and bed down for the night. Let's just hit the beach. And God bless him. He went with me, and it was insane, man. I mean, that was the coldest I've ever been in my entire life. And we're like
So you
huddling
guys camped
underneath
out
of a
on the beach.
house. Oh yeah, we're huddled underneath. There's this one house, you'll remember it, the one that kind of sticks way out on the beach, right before you hit
Oh.
Corova. All right, so that
Oh
one,
yeah.
it has this nice little opening underneath of it, and we were camped out underneath there, just trying to get out of the wind and the rain for a while. And it was nuts. And then the wind was so bad on the beach that we actually went up and we hit the sand roads in Corova just so we'd have the houses and like the dunes just to break some of the wind so that we could survive, man. But oh my gosh, it took us
That's
eight
crazy.
and a half
So you must,
hours.
that's
Go ahead.
crazy. So you must have ahead of dense because we hadn't hit the beach yet on that really super, very windy night. And then we hit the beach the next morning, but it was still very cold and breezy out there even the next day. So,
Yeah, we finished
wow.
just right at 4 days. So we were right at 96 hours. So
Okay.
I remember having a great chat with Steve. I was on my way back from the lighthouse and he was on his way down and we just sort of scurried off the road a little bit and had a great chat. And that was the first time I'd ever really had a chance to talk with Steve. And I was like, man, what a great guy. I love Steve.
There's no way we didn't cross paths then because I was with him during all that.
I know
So I
that's what I'm
was.
sitting there going, I had to have met you at some point.
Yeah, you had to have. Well, one thing is for sure in this brief convo, you will see me exactly 2 times during the Swami at the start and maybe at some point when we pass each other after the turnaround, but
I was
you're
gonna
going
say
to be way
we'll
ahead
see
of me.
each other at the turnaround. So yeah. I mean, and
Yeah, I'm in.
that's what I love about Swami is, you're going out like I've never been, like in the top five or anything like that. But you get to see the really fast zoomers. You're seeing them coming back from the lighthouse, and you're going, "Daggone! I just want to make it to the lighthouse." And then you're on the way back from the lighthouse, and you're seeing everybody else, and so you see everybody in the race. At least once. You're going to
Yeah.
see them at some point, and it's always going to be between Pea Island and the lighthouse is where you're going to see
Yeah.
everybody. And that makes it fun. That makes it okay. I'm not out here all by myself being an idiot. So that's nice.
Yeah, I'm being an idiot with everybody else.
It's an insane, insane race, but you know what? I have learned more about myself on the 2 times I've done it. And I will tell you, I've probably had some of my favorite God moments out on Swami Shuffle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't ask
Yeah.
for a better cause, than honoring veterans.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm glad this is my first journey race is because of that, being a veteran myself, it's good to do an event that'll bring awareness to prevention of veteran suicide and that sort of thing. So I'm very glad that it's for a good cause. We're not out there torturing ourselves for nothing,
Yeah, well, it's definitely not for the buckle. I mean, James does a great job for the buckle, and the buckle's there. But yeah, there's a much bigger cause than just going out there and doing something for yourself.
Yeah, right.
Well, cool. So, what's your strategy going to be?
Well, here's my thing, okay? A lot of people in the running community don't know this. I do talk about it pretty openly, but I have muscular dystrophy, okay?
Yeah.
So my case is not as severe as many people's are. Mine was not readily noticeable until 2011. That's when I first realized something wasn't right. I could no longer lift my arms over my head. I didn't know why. And had a series of tests done at Duke, and they eventually concluded that I have a type of muscular dystrophy called FSHD, and I can't pronounce what all that stands for, but
Okay.
that's the type of muscular dystrophy that I have. So it usually attacks specific muscle groups, and they're not always symmetrical. Sometimes they attack one side and not the other. But for me, it's my upper back muscles, my glutes, my quads, my triceps primarily are
Okay.
the muscle groups that are affected for me. And so the good news is I'm still able to run, I'm still able to walk and hike, but I am slowing down more quickly than age itself would have me to slow down. And so
Okay.
it's, really becoming a struggle to do endurance events. There's not any pain or discomfort involved. It's just my muscles just don't do what they used to do. And so it's just harder. And so my strategy going in is to just do whatever I have to do to just keep logging the miles. And, you know, I probably will only run 10% of the entire distance just because my muscles, they just fatigue a lot faster than they used to.
Right.
And so I'll probably run just enough to make a little time and switch up my muscle use some, but most of the distance that I log will just be walking and hiking. So,
oh,
but if I can do enough of that every day, you know, make good use of the clock, then hopefully I can survive the distance.
You'll be able to do it, man. I'm a converted runner that I do all mine power walking. So I do very little running at all. I do most of mine power walking, and I still get her done. The great thing about a journey run is you move at your pace. It's your race, and you don't worry what everybody else is doing, and you just take care of your body and listen to your body, and you'll be able to do it no problem at all.
Well, that's good. That's very encouraging to hear. And I know I'm going to be one of the last ones to finish. I'm last at almost, well, not dead last. Sometimes I'm dead last, but I'm usually in the last 5% of the field in almost every race that I run. And so, you know, I'm very comfortable being the back. That doesn't bother me. But, you know, mentally, I just need to prepare for being out there the full 6 days, because that's probably what it's going to take for me.
Yeah, I mean, just going to keep on putting one foot in front of the other and get to the finish line. There will be a whole crew of us there welcoming you in with open arms.
Wow, that's a good thought right there.
There you go. There you go.
Wow.
Hey, every year, as many of us that they can go out there and greet tail gunners. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for that. That was very encouraging. I appreciate you sharing that with me. I'm looking forward to it. It wouldn't hurt if the weather was on our side, but the Outer Banks are mighty moody, so who knows?
Yeah, the weather has never been the same, and it's not the same from day to day. Like you could start off on, you know, Sunday morning, and it is just gorgeous, and you're loving it, and you get off the sand, and all of a sudden there's a howling windstorm, and you know, or it heats up like last year. Last year we hit the road, and it had been so nice and everything was great. And we hit the road, and I'm telling you what, it got up into the 70s, and I'm sitting there going, it is February, y'all. This is not what it's supposed to be, you know, because Mike does not like running in heat and humidity. And the hotter it got, the more I was just like, oh, okay, this is just going to be a slugger out fest. And it was a slug fest the whole way, but yeah. Got it done.
Yeah,
that's
actually,
all that matters.
In 22, when I was pacing Dance, man, I will never forget this. We were in Kerala, and we were gearing up for the beach stretch, and it was like 78 degrees, but I kept looking at the weather app, and they kept showing that the temperature was going to plummet. And boy, did it ever. I'm going to tell you what, there was some kind of system moving in. It didn't bring rain or anything. It just dropped the temperature. I'm telling you, man, within an hour, maybe two at best, the temperature plummeted almost 20 degrees.
And so we
literally changed seasons in just a matter of 90 minutes. It was the craziest thing. And so, you know, we were hitting the beach stretch, and we didn't get off there until nighttime that year. But, you know, we had to. You know, when you're in there, you're in there. You know, if you don't have it, then you're just screwed. So we needed to be sure we had the layers that we were going to need for when the temperature plummeted. And it was a good thing we did.
Well, cool. Well, let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. As you know, the name of the podcast is Living an Ultra Life. So when you hear that, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
And I guess in many ways, the ultra marathon does translate to a living life. There's highs and lows and ups and downs. There's preparations and lessons learned, things to do, things to not do. But through it all, you just keep your head up and persevere. It doesn't have to be pretty. And personally, my mantra in ultra running is to never focus on the finish line, but to focus on the step that I'm in. And eventually all of the steps will accumulate to become the finish line. And so when I use that mindset in races, it really helps me to sort of dumb down the distance and not get overwhelmed by the magnitude of it all, and instead just focus on where I'm at.
Perfect. That's awesome, David. Dude, I look forward to actually, I know we've met, but I look forward to meeting you in February. All right. Well, David, blessings, man. Looking forward to seeing you, and keep on training and getting ready for the grand adventure.
Same to you, man. Thank you for having me on the show, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultralife.